Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Frozen stocks of meat remain low. According to the USDA cold storage report, cold stocks of pork on November 30th are down 8% from the prior month and 3% from a year ago, which previously was the lowest level for pork since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Meanwhile, poultry stocks are down 17% from the prior month and 18% from a year ago, while beef is up 4% from the prior month and down 4% from last year.
Economist, Western Illinois University, Jason Franken.
The USDA estimates U.S. per capita pork consumption at 50.9 pounds per person for 2021 and forecasts the number dropping to 49.9 pounds per person in 2022. Prior to COVID-19, U.S. per capita pork consumption reached 52.4 pounds per person in 2019, or the highest it's been since it was 54.2 pounds in 1981.
This is Agriculture Today.
I farm in the northern Texas panhandle. My main crop is corn, but I also grow cotton, grain sorghum, and wheat. Most of my land is irrigated and produces very high-yielding crops.
Dee Vaughn is a past president for the National Corn Growers Association.
The Texas Corn Producers Board and 20 other state corn grower organizations requested the Ag and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M to study the nitrogen industry and the pricing of nitrogen fertilizer in the United States. If you look at Figure 7, as Joe mentioned, Dr. Outlaw mentioned, in the study, it is very clear the industry has not based the price of nitrogen fertilizer on the cost of natural gas since 2009. Other parts of the study highlight the concentration that has occurred within the nitrogen fertilizer industry in recent years. There's just now four major players that control 75% of our U.S. industry, nitrogen-producing industry. CF Industries is the dominant player among those four. From this study, it certainly appears the industry uses market power to set the price of nitrogen fertilizer. If a tariff is put in place, nitrogen will likely increase by an additional $102 per ton. It's important to note the tariff does not just increase the price of imported nitrogen. It will also raise the price of all domestically produced nitrogen fertilizer as well. After the huge price increases over the past 24 months, the statement by NCGA President Edgington about potential tariffs is very true. He said they will add insult to injury and impose financial hardship on family farms.
This study from the Agriculture Food Policy Center at Texas A&M, conducted by Dr. Joe Outlaw, looking at the potential of tariffs on fertilizer imports.
While we didn't have build a full-blown model that we would have done in some other instances for other occasions, we were asked, could we say anything about what would happen if tariffs are put in place? And we use, which we do a lot of things, is we go to the literature and see if someone and some of our colleagues have done anything on something like that. And in fact, we found a highly respected publication that addressed this specifically. And there's three points I'm making, and they're in yellow here. The first one is there's a significant break between natural gas prices, basically 2010. That's the first thing. So any thought that higher gas prices are driving these fertilizer costs is not valid. The second point is the second yellow is that basically there's a lot of math behind these papers. If you want to go find them, the references are in the paper. But essentially the math basically shows that any import tariff on nitrogen fertilizers would raise the prices for both domestically produced and imported fertilizer by the full amount of the tax multiplied by the pre-tax price. So in this particular case, we're talking about tariffs on two countries. Actually, the marginal cost is of the higher. So it'd be 10%, and 10% of the most recent price would lead to roughly $102 additional on top of what I just said, which is about a $600 price increase that we've seen or price that we've seen. So roughly that, this looks like, well, it's only $12 an acre for nitrogen costs more if these tariffs were put in place. But frankly, you cannot look at it like that. It is this $12.78 would be on addition to these currently near record prices that we're looking at right now.
It's Agriculture Today.
For the better part of a century, Capital Farm Credit has partnered with farmers, ranchers, agribusinesses, and rural landowners. We're the largest rural lender in Texas, and our members share in the profits with one of the strongest patronage programs in the country. We return almost 100% of our earnings, which helps you with the cost of borrowing. Let us share profits with you. CapitalFarmCredit.com.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Fertilizer is that global commodity. Market factors are going to influence it, not only domestically, but globally as well.
Shelley Myers is an economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation on the demand side of fertilizer.
Here in the U.S., our fertilizer use is concentrated primarily in three crops. Three crops use 70% of our nutrient use. It's corn, soybeans, and wheat. And when you look at our use, as Veronica said, we use a lot. We're one of the largest producers of all three of those crops, exporting our not only our domestic product, but also the end products as well. And so when we take the demand side of fertilizer use, everything that you're doing to need fertilizer, we need fertilizer to grow our crops, you're looking at it. We've also had a lot of influences to increase our planted acres. Corn, soybean, and wheat prices have been up over the last year. But that was unexpected. And so when we look at the use of fertilizer, our planted acres are up, but global planted acres are up. If you also look at our competitors, think Argentina, Brazil, who are growing corn and soybeans, they had some tougher production years where their fertilizer use is going to need to be increased in order to get the yield that they're looking for. And so overall, that global demand has really driven for a lot of producers to say, I need more fertilizer. That's number one on the demand side, is that a lot more people are saying we need more fertilizer.
So if we know what the problems are, surely the solution is straightforward.
If I were you sitting there listening at this point, I'd say, well, then just build more plants, right? Their demand is there. There's not enough production. How challenging could this possibly be? Well, 3.5 years, or 3 to 5 years is the average amount of time it takes to build a nitrogen facility. Excuse me, anhydrous ammonia facility, $3 to $5 billion. And that's in normal circumstances. So, yes, long term, we'd like to see more production of fertilizer here in the U.S. It makes us more resilient when we have international shocks. But this is a long term commitment in order to build those plants. I'd also say that to give a little context, Shelby mentioned back in 2008-09, we had the price spike in fertilizer markets. At that particular time, there were 40% fewer anhydrous ammonia plants in 2009 than there were in 2000. Because of what was going on with natural gas production and prices, a lot of those anhydrous plants had closed. Fast forward to 2020, all of that production has come back. So we went... Over the course of 8 years, from 2000 to 2008, we lost 40% of production. That's back. So the industry has been slowly rebuilding, and domestic share of total production is significantly higher than the last time that we had this situation in the fertilizer markets.
Yeah, and I certainly think that's why a lot of your retailers are saying we don't expect a major shortfall, because they do have those production facilities available. They just can't run them at 110%. To make up for the pauses and disruptions that have happened. And not to mention, too, these are facing the same kind of disruptions and pauses throughout the supply and distribution chain that any other industry is facing. Trucking rates, labor shortages, weather impacts, any kind of weather that's going to force one of the plants to stop, pause, or shut down and turn it into something and wait for whatever weather event to pass along is going to impact that outlook as well. So unfortunately, this industry hasn't been immune to what everybody else is doing either.
It's Agriculture Today.
Take the guesswork out of preparing your cotton for harvest with NanoPro. Utilizing NanoPro's revolutionary nanoliquid technology, your harvest aids go to work faster and more efficiently, increasing leaf drop, reducing regrowth, and helping your cotton be ready when you are. Offering a 3-to-1 return on investment, you can't go wrong with NanoPro. Learn more or find your nearest dealer by calling Tracy Carrillo at 575-639-5110 or visit aquayield.com.
Ring in the new year with savings at South Plains Implement. Looking for a new ride? Get great deals and financing options across a wide selection of John Deere lawn equipment during the Winter Green Sales event. Have time to tackle repairs on harvest equipment? In-stock peanut and cotton harvest equipment parts 15% off. Ready to plow into planting season? South Plains Implement offering 15% off complete sets of tillage parts. Some restrictions apply. Offers end January 31st at South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
USDA did update the numbers, and they did show, if you will, a little bit of a rebound in meat production as we look forward into next year. They did bump those numbers up a bit, but pretty much all of that growth was in the broiler industry.
Chad Hart is an Iowa State University Extension economist, has been looking to see what feed demand numbers from USDA say about meat production in 2022.
In fact, as we look, they held their beef number for 2022 stable. They barely increased the pork, and they actually pulled back a little bit on the turkeys here. But what this means to me is, as I'm looking between 2021 and 2022, is that we will see a slight decline in overall meat production. And typically, you can relate meat production to feed demand as we look out there. So we'll likely see feed demand holding steady as we move forward into 2022. The wild card there might be, do the dry conditions out west force a little more feed demand out there to fill in for what is missing in terms of our pasture and rangelands out west.
That's Chad Hart, Iowa State University Extension economist. So when we talk about the numbers for 2022, there's another area we probably need to focus on. Danielle Beck is Senior Executive Director of Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, on fake meat.
NCBA's policy is very clear on this issue. Regardless of whether we're talking about a plant-based product or a lab-grown product, the term beef should only be applicable to products derived from livestock raised by farmers and ranchers. And so all of our efforts, when we're talking about the plant-based products that are currently on the market, as well as those cell culture or lab-grown products that have yet to enter the market, really center around the topic that the term beef needs to be reserved for those products raised by farmers and ranchers. And when we look at cell cultured products, how do we preserve a fair, even playing field for all of our products to compete upon? Obviously, this is a novel product that's going to be competing directly against, traditional or conventional raised beef products. How do you ensure that these products aren't trading on beef's good name and are labeled in a way that really empowers consumers to make informed purchasing decisions? So USDA recently had their advance notice of proposed rulemaking, which will inform future rulemakings on the topic of labeling. And all of our comments really centered around the fact that that term beef needs to be reserved for real beef products. But we also offered up a couple different terms that we think would be viable labeling alternatives for these new novel products. I think one of the most interesting things from our survey was the fact that 74% of consumers agreed across the board that these products need to be differentiated in the marketplace. While consumer awareness was actually pretty low, around 13%, that resounding 74% number really does show that consumers want to be able to tell exactly what it is that they're buying. And when given the opportunity to select from a couple different options in terms of terms that might provide them with a clear understanding of what the product was, lab grown was selected the most often as being the easiest to understand. And so we believe that these products should be called lab grown proteins, but we know that there's going to be a much longer conversation, a lot more work to do as USDA moves forward and FDA for that matter. So we're going to continue engaging until labeling standards are developed, and more importantly, until rigorous safety standards are developed for these products. We know that they're novel, and USDA has daily continuous inspection for all federally inspected beef products. We expect the same set of rigorous standards to be applied to these novel products.
That's Danielle Beck with NCBA. It's Agriculture Today.
For years, cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. NextGen brand cottonseed from America. You can depend on NextGen varieties for performance and yields year after year. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Oh, and one other thing. Americott is now offering cotton seed treatments to protect your seed investment against your early season challenges. To find out more, contact your local NextGen representative or seed dealer today. Americott. All we do is cotton. All the time.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turn roads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
This is Agriculture Today.
A really big impact is of all these things is inflation. All this activity by the Federal Reserve Bank has increased the supply of money, and where's too much money chasing too little stuff, it raises the prices of everything.
That's the new chief economist for the American Farm Bureau Federation, Dr. Roger Cryan, on the impact of wild federal spending.
One of the reasons for the Federal Reserve putting the money in, it also supported the spending, the federal spending. And the conclusion is there was really just too much demand. The stimulus, all the extra money, we're borrowing against the future, and we're putting a lot of demand out there, and the supply of all the stuff all over the world could only grow so fast. So it's a combination of things. It's COVID, impacts of COVID led a lot of folks to shut things down last spring in 2020. Through the middle of the year, there were a lot of things that shut down, a lot of production facilities shut down. There was a lot of catching up to do. We're still catching up. We're facing labor issues. You heard some of that, I think, earlier today. But a lot of people have reevaluated work after the interruption of their work life from the pandemic. A lot of folks are reevaluated, and a lot of people, frankly, are deciding they don't need to work and they're not going to work. Or they don't want to work now, or they're afraid to come back to work. So it's been very hard, as you all know, to find folks to do the work that needs to be done.
So what's the bottom line when we look at inflation?
We have the last month's numbers gave us the highest inflation rate. We have the highest inflation rate we've seen in 40 years. And that 40 years, I think, is pretty significant because some of us remember 40 years ago. Some of us remember what a difficult time it was. Inflation is really critical that inflation be brought under control quickly. It may end up feeling painful in 2022 to do that, but I can promise you, and those of you who like me were around to remember that, letting inflation get out of control is going to be much more painful to bring it under control. An awful lot of folks, especially a lot of folks on the farm, suffered quite a bit when inflation drove up interest rates. It messed up lending relationships. It created all kinds of structures for lending that included really high rates to cover high inflation. And when the inflation was brought under control, some folks got stuck with mortgages with 15-18% interest rates when inflation was back down to two or three or four percent. It would be a terrible thing to let inflation get under control so that the long-term expectations for interest rates and so forth are building those in. So this is one of the many reasons that we have some concerns about continuing to do this massive spending because it does contribute to inflation. If anybody tells you that a big government spending program is going to reduce inflation, they're just trying to talk you into something. And it's not the economics don't support that.
We tend to forget this from time to time, but Cryan says, remember history.
The history lesson we have, if we don't learn to know our history, we will be condemned to repeat it. If we don't recognize and remember the impacts, the really, really terrible things that inflation did to us in the 70s, and the even worse things that controlling inflation did to us in the 80s, we risk falling into that trap again and going through that all over again. I don't think we want to do that.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You know, a lot of times we'll get emails saying, my hay tested this, what can I feed? And at least that's a good starting point, at least if you've gotten your hay tested. But one of the things that people I find tend to leave out of their emails to me or their initial phone calls and descriptions is exactly what kind of animals are we looking at feeding.
Dr. Katie Van Valens with the University of Kentucky Beef Extension.
Because whether you're talking about a spring calving herd, where we've just weaned off those calves or we're getting ready to wean those calves off, that's going to be very different than if we're talking about feeding a fall calving herd through the winter. And so really making sure that we understand that those two types of production systems have vastly different winter feeding programs and different goals for those programs.
Now, she talks about spring calving cows at wintertime.
One of the biggest things when we start thinking about that spring calving herd is once we've weaned off that calf, that she is now at her lowest nutrient requirement that she's going to be at throughout the year. And so if there's an opportunity to have to put some condition back on her, now's the time to do that, right? Right after we've weaned off that calf, now's the time. If we've got some thin cows, maybe separate them off so we can start feeding them a little bit more aggressively to put that condition back on.
And fall calving cows at wintertime.
That's a little bit different scenario, right? Because now they're at their highest nutrient requirement throughout the year because they've got a calf at their side or they're about to have a calf at their side. And so they're coming into their highest nutrient requirement. And so when we start thinking about the goals of feeding the fall cows, we got to start thinking about keeping what we've got. It's going to be pretty difficult to ask that cow to continue to milk and put condition on top of that. So at the very least, we want to make sure that she doesn't lose any condition while she's got that calf at her side.
Says keep in mind body condition scores.
So as a nutritionist, these are all the things I start thinking about when I start talking with producers or working with county agents to come up with game plans on how to feed cows. Those are the types of questions that come through my mind. The other thing that we need to, again, think about it is what is the body condition score of the herd, right? We want the body condition score to be at least a 5. If it gets below a 5, that really starts to throw us into problems with getting those cows bred back. And so we want to make sure that we keep them at least a 5, if not approaching a 6, if we tend to be along the low side. And so those are some of the things that we really got to think about.
And really talks about the basis of that feeding program.
For most of us, that's probably going to be grass hay. But sometimes we start thinking about using corn silage or maybe baleage as some of our sources. And so when we start thinking about what that basis of the diet is going to be, it's really important that we get those ingredients analyzed. Because if that's making up the bulk of our diet or bulk of our ration for those cows over the winter, we need to know what we've got so we can figure out what we need. So one of the things about forage is, compared to some of the other feed ingredients that we can utilize, is that nutrient quality can vary very greatly from one field to the next, from one farm to the next. That can vary a lot. So I don't like estimating forage nutrient contents. I like to get those analyzed and feel much more comfortable working with those numbers once we've gotten those analyzed. So that's the plug that if you haven't thought about it or you haven't done it yet, to get your hay tested.
Again, Katie Van Valen with the University of Kentucky Beef Extension. It's Agriculture Today.
The Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show is the oldest and largest event in the beef cattle industry, and we're headed to Houston, February 1st through the 3rd. Everything's bigger in Texas, so you can't afford to miss the massive NCBA Trade Show. Engaging speakers, outstanding education, all for the beef cattle industry. We've gone to Texas for CattleCon 2022, February 1st through the 3rd. Visit convention.ncba.org for more.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So as we wrap up our thoughts about the 2021 market, we realize that global demand, particularly for coal and iron ore going to China, has increased dramatically. And we understand that cargo demand has outpaced the size of the fleet and the ability of the fleet to carry all that grain.
That's Jay O'Neill with O'Neill Commodity Consulting on questions that we need to answer.
We also realize that the new order book for new dry bulk vessels is very small in relation to increased cargo demand. So going forward and trying to determine what's going to happen as we move into 2022 and 2023, we have to try to understand as best we can what is going to happen with global economies. How fast will global economies come out of COVID? How fast will global economies grow? And therefore, how fast will cargo demand grow? And will the current Chinese spike in demand continue for years to come? Or will it be more temporary and transitory? Difficult questions to come to a definitive answer on, but this is what is facing the ocean freight industry at the moment. So volatility will likely remain as we go into the next year, probably into the next 2 years. Do prices have to just go straight up? No. In fact, we're already beginning to see a softening in rates. And the question is that softening of rates at the moment temporary? Is it the market taking a breather? Or will we be off to the races again in a few months? Difficult question to answer and something that all vessel charters have to take into consideration and be very, very mindful of.
What happens now?
I think that COVID hopefully is diminishing. Hopefully global economies will start to grow, albeit we don't know how quickly. And the one thing I think that is a constant is that volatility will continue to plague us. We'll see some markets dip. And we'll also, I'm sure, see some market spike back up again. So if you're a cargo buyer, timing is going to be very, very important. And getting greedy probably won't help. So as we recap what's happening quickly in the containerized market, we see that COVID and COVID-led consumer buying in the United States and Europe has caused an all-time spike in container volume rates. The port of LA Long Beach on the west coast of the United States has seen cargo volumes increase by 30% to 40%. And it's having a hard time. The U.S. and Europe is having a hard time and struggling logistically to handle this bump in ocean freight and cargo volumes. We see that the entire infrastructure of the United States in particular, we are now short vessels, we are short of containers, we have a short supply of skilled labor at the ports, short supply of workers at warehouses in the interior. There's a 30% shortage of truck drivers in the United States, of railroad flat cars and container chassis. So the entire logistical supply chain right now is tied up in a knot and struggling to keep up with new cargo demand. In short, I think what's going to happen is rates seem to have topped, albeit they're still very high, but I think they've topped out, and I don't think we'll see container rates, both interior coming in or exterior export going out, are likely to continue to increase. I believe they've topped out. But the logistical mess that we are trying to work our way through will probably plague us into the middle of 2022. So logistics will continue to be quite volatile and quite difficult. If you need something delivered in a container, you better allow 30, 60, maybe even 90 extra days of transit time, given all the delays that this industry is seeing.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Did you know that the world-famous Café Du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like a Café Du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
An example of supply chain challenges being addressed in part through technological advances. Riley Buss of CHS Incorporated said sensors and data are a major part of their supply chain network.
We leverage barges on the Mississippi River to take grain all the way down to Louisiana to enter into the global market. We put sensors in those barges so that way we can monitor one location, the weather that's happening at that location when it's going downriver, the humidity inside, and everything along the whole supply chain.
And the data acquired from these sensors then can facilitate decisions, such as sourcing product elsewhere to assure shipments arrive at their destinations on time. Meanwhile, development of an autonomous grain elevator is taking place in Minnesota, which can expedite processes such as grain moisture and damage determination.
We'll actually be able to, one, hopefully be able to pay producers faster because that's been an automated process that can go directly into our systems and we can be paying producers faster, and then also open to meet all kinds of demands that our customers have.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.